Si necesitan reforzarlo y darle un buen impulso. En Vaughan te lo ponemos fácil. Con nuestros cursos Impact Junior no tendrán que pasarse todo el verano con los libros. En una semana y con un método divertido mejorarán su nivel. Nuestros profesores sacarán lo mejor de ellos en un ambiente divertido y rodeado de amigos. Apúntales ahora antes de que sea demasiado tarde. Llama al 91-133-5832 o entra en grupovaughan.com.
¿Do you Vaughan?
¿Eres de los que cuando van a nadar dicen swing en vez de swim? Apúntate este verano a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende, y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Date prisa. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende, y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Aprende, diviértete. Esto, lo que escuchas, es Vaughan Radio.
Sound of English.
Coming up on today's show, we have the word of the day, rind. We also have the expression from scratch, or begin or start from scratch. And we also have listening challenges to put you to the test. And of course, we have our famous app questions. Fingers crossed that they work properly today. Okay, coming up on today's show.
Hola, Juan. Perdona que te moleste ahora que estás tan tranquilito en esta hamaca. Soy tu yo de septiembre y vengo a decirte que te pongas ya las pilas con el inglés. Todo este ratito que te estás pasando mirando al infinito, luego lo vas a echar de menos. En septiembre te entrará el agobio con el inglés otra vez. Mira, hasta me ha salido una cana. Pero no vengo a agobiarte, simplemente a darte un consejo. Con el curso online de Vaughan puedes empezar ahora a mejorar tu inglés. Desde aquí, desde la terracita, a tu ritmo. Y con un método que sabes que funciona. Hazme caso, no dejes para septiembre lo que puedes hacer hoy. Entra en www.aprendeinglestv.com y apúntate al curso online Vaughan. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Hello there, welcome to The Sound of English, the show where you, the listener, are the protagonist. We'll be putting you to the test very, very soon with some app questions and, of course, with your listening challenge. Now, I remember that on Friday, there were some problems with the app. I received a few emails, for example, well, no, a few tweets, should I say, from Ionut and from Megan Fergo as well. And from Juan Ramon, and I think there was somebody else who wrote in as well. Yeah, Paola also wrote in. They all answered the questions correctly, but it didn't show up as correct. So hopefully, fingers crossed, the people in charge have sorted out the problem. So let's see if I'm right. We'll see right away, because I'm going to give you the first app question, okay? The first app question is to do with pronunciation. In fact, all three app questions are to do with pronunciation. Okay, so let's just see if this one works. If it doesn't work, then try to be patient. It's one of these things that sometimes happens. So which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? So it's totally to do with pronunciation. Which of the three words that I'm going to give you now, I'm not going to actually read them out because it's about pronunciation, is pronounced differently from the other two. The first word is, in Spanish, alce americano, and that is spelt in English M-O-O-S-E. Then the second word is, in Spanish, musa, or the verb meditar, which in English is spelt M-U-S-E. Then the third option is mousse, basically, you know, that type of food, which is spelled exactly the same in English, M-O-U-S-S-E. So we have alce americano, that's the first one. B, mousa, or meditar. And then C, mousse, which you pronounce sort of, you know, fairly similarly to the English way. So there we go. That's the first app question. The other two are similar, as I said, to do with pronunciation. And it looks like, well, people are answering. Let's hope that they're answering correctly. And if they are answering correctly, they get the points they deserve. Because, as I said, there were some problems on Friday. Hopefully, those problems have been resolved. But if they haven't, I do apologise. Okay, so that's our first app question. Now we're going to go on to my favourite section. I hope it's yours too. It is our listening challenge that we call Twitter Responde.
Y ahora el reto en Twitter a través de @imdavidguadel. Twitter Responde.
Okay, so the one I gave you on Friday was a tricky one, a difficult one. It was chaffney eggs. Chaffney eggs. Now, what am I saying? I do have a list of people, and in fact, just at the very last second, Paola Dimulescu has also had a go. So she's now on the list. She's last on the list, but she's definitely on the list. Not in the list. On the list. So again, I'll repeat it one more time. It was chaffney eggs. Chaffney eggs. Now, what does it sound like? It sounds like just one word. But in fact, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 words. And it is a question. So the key here is the first three words. Chaffney. Well, the first four words, really. Chaffney. Chaffney. What am I saying? Well, if I slow it down, chaffney, chaffney, chaffney. Do you have any? Do you have any? So you can see that it changes quite radically depending on the actual speed we say it. If I say it slowly, do you have any? This is just the first part. I still have to give you the last word. Do you have any? If I say it quickly, it becomes chaffney, chaffney, chaffney. Do you have any? Chaffney. So that's the first four words. Now, what's the last word? The noun at the end, I think, is fairly easy. Eggs. That doesn't change at all, does it? Eggs. Do you have any eggs? Entonces, it means tienes huevos. Of course, it doesn't have the other meaning that it has in Spanish, of course. If you wanted to have the other meaning, then you would say, do you have any balls, basically? But no. Do you have any eggs? Do you have any eggs? Tienes huevos? Huevos que, you know, comemos. Fried or whatever, or boiled. So the first person, I think I'll just move on now. The first person to get it right, 100% right, according to my records, is Express. He said, do you have any eggs? Perfect. And then I had a couple of people who asked me to repeat, so that is absolutely perfectly acceptable. Maria Carmen said, can you say it again, please? Of course. Perfect. That is the correct answer. And also Javi as well. He said, sorry, I didn't get you. Could you repeat it, please? Correct answer. If you say that, that is absolutely perfect. If you want some other ways of asking me to repeat it, you can say, sorry, I didn't catch that. That's very common. Sorry, I didn't catch that. Can you say it again? Or I didn't get that. Could you say it again? Could you repeat that again, please? Yeah? So I didn't catch that is a good one as well. One I've never said before, but we say it a lot. I didn't catch that. Can you say it again? Not a problem. Do you have any eggs? There we go. So well done, Maria Carmen and Javi, for sending me that those tweets asking me to repeat it again, because that's what you have to do. If you don't understand something, just ask somebody to repeat it, and of course they will. It's not a problem. Whatever you do, don't sort of freeze, I would say. Just ask them to repeat it, and we will, of course. Right, the next person on the list, we already have Express, we have Maria Carmen, we have Javi. The next person to have a go was Samarta. At first, she didn't quite get it. She got the first four words. Do you have any? And then she said, I guess I'll listen to the podcast. And she did, and she got it right. But the next person to have a go was Virginia. Strangely enough, Virginia sent in the right answer, really, because it means the same thing, but a different way of saying it. Instead of saying, do you have, using the verb to have, she actually wrote in, have you got? Which, of course, in the UK is probably more common than do you have. Have you got any eggs? Have you got any eggs? Do you have any eggs? So they mean exactly the same thing. But I'll give you full points for that, because it's exactly the same. And then Smarta came back. She had listened to the podcast. She had downloaded the podcast. And she came back and said, do you have any eggs? Perfect, 100%. And then Pete had a go. He was close. Do you have it in the next? Then Lata wrote in saying, do you've any eggs? With a very strange contraction, that, because you wouldn't actually pronounce it like that. And also, if you actually have the verb, the normal verb to have, which is, of course, tener, we very rarely contract it. Very, very rarely. However, if we're talking about the auxiliary verb have, which forms the present perfect, then of course we always, when we're speaking, I would say, contract it. I've, you've, they've, yeah, he's, she's. But this case, it is tener. So we would never, ever either write it or probably pronounce it, because if you listen very carefully, javini, the A of have is always there. So we always pronounce the first syllable, this first sound, this ah. Javani? Do you have any eggs? But really, that is correct. So well done, Lata. I don't agree with the contraction, but that's okay. And then we have Belen. Do you have any eggs? Perfect. Manuel had a go. And then Catalina as well. Have you got any eggs? So just like Virginia, Catalina heard the other way of asking the same question. Do you have any eggs? Have you got any eggs? Kenny's huevos. And then, as I said, right at the very last minute, just a few minutes ago, in fact, Paola Di Mulescu has written in, do you have any eggs? Perfect. Well done. So that was our podcast Twitter respondent, the one I gave you on Friday afternoon. Do you have any eggs? Do you have any eggs? Do you have any milk? Do you have any eggs? Do you have any rice? Do you have any salt? Do you have any sugar? Do you have any anything? Do you have any? Do you have any? Very, very common. Do you have any? This case, of course, it's in front of a plural noun, but it can also be in front of uncountable nouns, as I said, like, do you have any water? Do you have any wine? Do you have any milk? Do you have any eggs? With a plural. Okay, so that's that one. I've read out the list of people, so it's now time to give you the live version. Okay, are you ready for the live version of Twitter Responde? Okay, should we count down? Okay, what number? Four. Yes, that's what I thought as well. So 4, 3, 2, 1. We've run out of toner. There we go. That was your first hearing. This is a really, really challenging one. They're all challenging, of course, but this one in particular. I'll repeat it again. If you know what I'm saying, then tweet me on I'm David Waddell. If you don't understand what I'm saying, then you can still tweet me, but just say, I didn't catch that. Could you say it again, please? I didn't get that. Can you say it again? Can you say it again, please? Can you repeat that, please? And of course, I will read your name out, because that is a correct answer as well. But if you want to have a go at this one, then I'll just say it one more time. For now, of course, I'll repeat it again during the programme, but this is your second hearing of today's Twitter Responde live listening challenge. It is. We've run out of toner. I would say it's probably one of the most challenging ones we've done so far, but let's just see. I've had a few people already actually having a go. Oh my goodness me. I've already had one from Express, for example, very quick off the mark. And it looks like Virginia has just said 4 points. Aha, very good. So it looks like, oh, another person has had a go. Melena has also had a go. Well done. I'll tell you if you got it right a bit later on in the show, of course. But for now, I'll just give you another hearing of today's live listening challenge. Okay, it is. Listen to it very, very carefully. And if you know the answer, then as I said before, just tweet me on I'm David Waddell on Twitter. It was, we've run out of toner.
Y no dejes de participar a través de nuestra aplicación. Descárgatela. Hay maneras de empezar el día. Y claro, hay mejores formas de empezar el día. Y es que en las mañanas con Vaughan empiezan con un saludo.
Hello, good morning.
A las 7:30, haz las mañanas más productivas, más radio, más Vaughan, mucho más Richard Vaughan Live.
Menos mal que ha llegado, está fatal.
Tendremos que sacárselo.
You, Howard, my Charlie name is Charlie, Charlie, are you where from?
¡Sal de ahí! ¡Venga, sal!
¡Sácaselo, por favor!
¡Manifiéstate!
Hi, how are you? My name is Charlie, where are you from?
Con el curso online de Vaughan sacarás el inglés que llevas dentro, adaptado a tus horarios, flexible y con todos los contenidos del método Vaughan. Y con nuestros profesores siempre disponibles. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en aprendeinglestv.com. Do you Vaughan?
¿Sabes que puedes tener un profesor Vaughan en tu empresa? Con nuestro programa English in Company creamos planes de formación a medida de cada alumno de cada grupo y nuestros profesores se desplazan a tu empresa en el horario que mejor se adapte a vuestras necesidades. English in Company, el método Vaughan en tu empresa. Infórmate sin compromiso en el 91133-5831 o en grupovaughan.com.
¿Todavía no has venido a visitarnos a nuestro nuevo centro en Barcelona? Estamos esperándote en calle Vía Augusta 189. Apunta, calle Vía Augusta 189. Ven a conocer el método Vaughan y llévate de regalo This Book is the Mini Milk. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Right, okay, it's time to give you the first app question. It seems to be okay. I haven't received any tweets from people saying that they got it right and didn't get the points, so hopefully it's going all right. So remember, which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? And the words I gave you were the English words for alce americano, which is spelled M-O-O-S-E. The other word was musa or meditar, which in English is M-U-S-E. And the third word was mousse, which we would pronounce the same, M-O-U-S-S-E. And of course, the correct answer. It looks like lots and lots of people have got it right today. 82.10% of you have got it right. And of course, the correct answer was B, our word for musa or meditar. So let's listen to the pronunciation. The first word was alce americano, which is M-O-O-S-E, and it's pronounced moose. B, musa or meditar, M-U-S-E, is pronounced muse. And then, of course, the final word, moose, is pronounced moose. So, alce americano y moose, exactly the same. They are homophones, moose and moose. But the other one, musa or meditar, muse. So well done to all the people who got that right. Now let's give you the second one before I forget. The second one again, which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? This time, the options I'm giving you are A, in Spanish, aire. In English, of course, spelt A-I-R. B, heredero, which in English is spelt H-E-I-R. Or C, the verb oír, which, of course, in English is spelt H-E-A-R. Okay, so those are your options. Which one is pronounced differently from the other two? Now, I'm going to look at the list of people who have had to go at the listening challenge. I can tell you that the list is looking very, very good, in fact, extremely good. So, as I said before, the first person to answer was Express, then Melena, Javi López was next person, then Smarta. Maria Ángeles Vidal has said, that went over my head. Can you repeat it, please? Correct! Well done. That is perfect. Of course, I will repeat it in 1 second. Well, a few seconds. Then Yolanda, she's had a go. Paula has had another go. And Javi López has had another go. Mr. Houses has had a go. So has Maggie, Manuel Cano, Virginia, Ana Belén, and Mercedes Jiménez. Okay, do you want to hear it one more time? It was, listen very carefully, today's Twitter Responde listening challenge, the live listening challenge is, we've run out of toner. Okay, so there we go. That's your next hearing. So the second app question is launched. I've given you the Twitter Responde live listening challenge. Now it's time to move on to the word of the day. Now, the word of the day I gave you on Friday was rind, and that is spelt R-I-N-D, rind. Of course, there are many words, one syllable ending I-N-D, find, for example, encontrar, kind, amable, mind, bind. That's a good one, to bind. How would you translate that? To bind? Well, I suppose it could be atar, could be sujetar. If you're talking about books, then it's encuadernar, I think, isn't it? And there's also the verb to wind. You wind up a clock or a watch, which is dar cuerda a. And it can also be enrollar as well. Ciego, blind, behind, grind. But rind, what does rind mean? Have you ever heard of that word? R-I-N-D? Well, the definition is, the definition I have here is a thick and firm outer coat or covering as of certain fruits, cheeses, and meats. Watermelon rind, orange rind, bacon rind. That's one I've heard of. Also, we have rindless as an adjective, rindy as an adjective as well. And it comes from, apparently, there's a cognate with the German, rind. So a thick and firm outer coat or covering as of certain fruits, cheeses, and meats. So, cáscara, piel, corteza. But of course, there are lots of words which with a similar meaning. For example, skin, or zest, or peel, or rind. Now, what's the difference between peel and rind, or skin, or zest? Very, very good question. As I said, I would say that a rind is, or rind in general, is thicker and firmer than, for example, skin. So you wouldn't say the rind of an apple, for example. Apples don't have rind, they have skin. Neither do bananas. I would say bananas have skin rather than rind. Now, the way that I use that word, if I ever use it, is with bacon, basically. Rind is it's usually thick, whereas skin is usually thin. Peel, which of course is also a verb, is when you actually take the skin off. That's when it becomes peel. So you first of all, it's skin. You peel it off and it becomes peel, like apple peel or potato peel. So there we go. So by and large, peel is the word we use for fruit. Orange peel, lemon peel, mixed, candied peel. and rind normally for savoury items like cheese or bacon or fruit with very thick skin like watermelon. And yeah, so skin for other context, I would say, like apples or bananas. So there are exceptions, of course, but that's basically what it is. So rind is the thick, firm outer coating of certain fruits, cheeses, and meats. So who was the first person to get it right, to write in on Friday? Well, at the top of my list for the word of the day today is Virginia Palacín. So rind, cáscara, piel, corteza. Fantastic. Well done, Virginia. And then next on the list is Juan Ramon. Now, he guessed the word rime, which is R-I-M-E. So he missed out the D sound. Rind? No, it was definitely rind. R-I-N-D. But he did say, he gave a very good definition of the word rime, which is frost formed on cold objects by rapid freezing of water vapor in cloud or fog. Escarcha, rima, escarchar. But that was not the word of the day. It was rind, which is cáscara, piel or corteza, depending on the fruit or whatever it is you're talking about. The next person was Peter. He wrote in rind, cáscara, corteza, piel. Fantastic. And then Latavarma, she came in with rind as a noun. It is also is only a noun, I would say. It's never a verb. Peel zest, add grated rind of lemon, cáscara de fruta, corteza de queso, ralladura de limón as well. Good stuff. Then Express wrote in rind, tough outer layer or covering of particular fruits and foods. And last but not least, we have Manuel. Word of the day, rind, cáscara, piel, corteza. So that was the word of the day, rind, which rhymes with find, kind, mind, bind, wind, blind, behind, and grind. So there we go. That's the word of the day. Okay, the one I'm going to give you for tomorrow is tongs. What does the word tongs mean? I will, of course, give you the answer on tomorrow's show. But if you want to participate, if you want to take part, then just tweet me on I'm David Woodell. That is @IMDAWIDWADDELL. I think that's right. There we go. So that was our word of the day. Now, moving on to the idiom of the day. Ooh, this is a tricky one. To do or to start or to begin something from scratch. Now, scratch is a difficult word to say, I should think, because it has this long S at the beginning. Scratch, not escratch. Scratch, what does scratch mean? Well, as a noun, of course, it's arañazo or rasguño as well. It could be raya if you're talking about a record. It's just a scratch, but also as a verb, of course, rasguñar or arañar or rasgar, raspar. Escarbar as well, which I didn't know, rayar. You'll scratch the worktop with that knife. And also it has the meaning of rascarse, to relieve an itch. He scratched his head. He scratched his head. So with the past tense, you have to join that extra syllable, scratched. So it's not an extra syllable. You think it's scratched, but it's scratched. Okay, I can hear the music, so I think we'll go for a break for a couple of minutes, and I'll be back soon.
Baugan Radio Madrid 100.4 FM.
Apúntate a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Baugan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupobaugan.com. Do you Baugan?
Ay, otra vez me ha suspendido el inglés. Este niño, ay, ya no sé lo que hacer. Dice que el inglés del colegio es un rollo, que se aburre y que no le gusta, por lo importante que es el inglés.
¿Sabes lo que le pasa a tu hijo? Que le gusta el inglés, pero todavía no lo sabe.
Este verano van a descubrirlo. Apúntalos a nuestro curso intensivo para niños y jóvenes entre 4 y 17 años, donde pasarán 4 horas al día durante toda una semana haciendo ejercicios divertidísimos. Descúbrele su pasión por el inglés. Infórmate en el 91-133-5832 o en grupoaugam.com.
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Vaughan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en grupovaughan.com.
¿Eres de los que cuando van a nadar dicen swim en vez de swim? Apúntate este verano a los cursos intensivos de inglés de Vaughan. Descubre la eficacia de un método que te reta y te sorprende, y con el que sí es posible mejorar tu inglés en poco tiempo. Eso sí, tendrás que esforzarte. Date prisa. Llama al 91-133-5833 o entra en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Escucha, descubre, aprende. Esto es Vaughan Radio.
Okay, welcome back to The Sound of English. I need to give you the answer to the second app question. Which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? And the options are, I can give you, A is aire in English, which of course is spelt A-I-R. B is heredero, which in English is spelt H-E-I-R. And then C is the verb oír, which, of course, in English is spelled H-E-A-R. I can tell you that we have 85% of you getting it right. Pretty good. And I'll give you the answer, basically. So the answer, of course, was C, oír, which, of course, in English is pronounced here, here. However, the first word, aire, is pronounced air, as is the second word, heredero, which is also pronounced air, although it's spelt H-E-I-R. So they are homophones. So C was the one which is pronounced differently from the other two. Here. Okay, shall I give you the third one? Right, the third and final app question is exactly the same as the other two. Which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? But this time, the options I'm giving you are A is pera in English. So, of course, in English it's spelt P-E-A-R. Now, the second word is our word for embarcadero or muelle, which in English is spelt P-I-E-R. Okay, you've got that. And then the third word is pareja or par, which in English is spelt P-A-R. I-R. Of course, the translations, there are others. So there we go. We have the three words. Which one is pronounced differently from the other two? I'll give you the answer to that a little bit later. Let's just have a look at the live listening challenge. It's going quite well, I can tell you. We have lots of people having a go. If you didn't get it, don't worry. If you don't understand it, don't worry. I'll give you another hearing straight away. It was, listen very carefully, we've run out of toner. We've run out of toner. Okay, what am I saying? It's a difficult one today, but quite a few people have got it right. I can tell you that the last person to have a go was Peter. Juan Ramon has had a go as well. Mercedes, Belen, Anna, Virginia, Manuel, Maggie, Mr. Houses, Javi, lots of people. So well done to all those people who are having a go. Even if you get it wrong, it doesn't matter. It's taking part which counts. Okay, so let's go back to the idiom of the day we were looking at before. To do or to start or to begin something from scratch, which in Spanish you would say desde cero. Yeah, empezar algo desde cero. But in English, it's to start or to do or to begin something from scratch. Why scratch? Because I was telling you that the translation arañazo or rasguño or raya as a noun or as a transitive verb, rasguñar, arañar, rascar, raspar as well. What does that have to do with starting? Well, the notion of scratch being the beginning, a point at which there is no advantage or disadvantage. So this is from an article from Phrase Finder. It says, this meaning originated in the sporting world, where scratch has been used since the 18th century to describe a starting line that was scratched on the ground. So again, we have that the ed ending, which is like squashed onto the end. So we don't say scratched, we say scratched. It's a type of pronunciation that needs practice. So every day I scratch. Yesterday I scratched. Lately I've scratched. It gives the example here of boxing, golf, and cricket. A very English sport there, cricket. And also any sport that involves some form of race uses lines on the ground as part of their regulations. And historians of each sport encourage the belief that their scratch was the first. Apparently, cricket has the strongest claim. Everyone who has ever played cricket as a child will be familiar with the batting and bowling creases, which will have scratched them on the ground to mark out the pitch. Okay? So the positions of boxers as well, boxeadores, who face each other at the beginning of a fight, used to be marked by a scratched line. And boxing has the best claim to have been the source of toe the scratch, which is like toe the line. Okay, and the expression start from scratch came about in handicap races where weaker entrants were given a head start. There we have another nice expression, a head start, which is un ventaja. So other sports, notably golf, have taken up the figurative use of scratch to mean with no advantage, starting from nothing. It's the person who is recorded as starting from scratch, the first person to actually write it, was about 1853, it says here, in Sheffield, in 1853, in a newspaper, talking about sports. So the match on the Hyde Park ground, Sheffield, has already created quite a furore of excitement among the sporting men of the North. The manner in which the men have been handicapped is James Pudney of Mile End and James Sheridan of Sheffield start from scratch. However, John Siddle, 6 yards, Richard Conway, 12, and John Saville, 20. So James Pudney and James Sheridan start from scratch. So, empezar desde cero. So that's the origin of this expression. Now, I can tell you who was first to get it right. Who got it right? I can tell you the first person was Virginia. Virginia. She said, and then Juan Ramon, to do something from scratch, comenzar de nuevo, Well, actually, it might not have been Virginia I'm seeing on my list here. It might have been Juan Ramon. If it was Juan Ramon, I do apologize. Juan Ramon, to do something from scratch, comenzar de nuevo, hacer algo desde el principio. Good. And then Express came in and said, do something from scratch, to do something from scratch. If you do something from scratch, you start right at the beginning. Very good. And then Belén, she said to do something from scratch, comenzar desde cero, desde el principio. And then María Carmen said to do something from scratch. And then she gave a very, very nice sentence, to do something from a recipe, not from a box. It's a very good example, because most people nowadays, when they do cooking, they do it from a box. But if you start from scratch, you do it from the recipe. I like that. So Anna also said to do something from the very beginning. Excellent. And then Javi, to start from scratch, back to square one. It's a lovely expression there as well. To start over, back to the drawing board. So some great synonyms there from Javi. Lata said to do something from scratch, hacer algo desde cero. Very good. And then Peter said to do something from scratch, empezar de nuevo, borrón y cuenta nueva. Then Lata, to do something from scratch again, de materias primas desde cero. I might have got that wrong, but never mind. Then Manuel, to do something from scratch, empezar algo desde la nada, desde el principio. And last but not least, Catalina, from scratch, desde cero. Well done, everyone, for having a go at the idiom of the day. To start something from scratch, to do something from scratch, to begin something from scratch. I think my favorite translation is hacer algo desde cero. Fantastic. So I'll give you today's idiom of the day, one we'll talk about on tomorrow's show. If you've heard this before, if you know what it means, then tweet me on I'm David Waddell. That is at IMDAVIDWADDELL. Okay, so the idiom of the day for tomorrow is to tide someone over. What does that mean? To tide someone over. We'll find out on tomorrow's show. Good. Let's have a quick look at the second app question, see how that's going. Sorry, the third app question, shall I say? The third and final app question. If you remember, it was which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? The examples are A, pera, which in English is spelt P-E-A-R. B, embarcadero or muelle, which in English is spelt P-I-E-R. One of the translations, there are many. And the third word is pareja or par, which in English P-A-I-R. Again, one of the translations, not the only translation. So which one is pronounced differently from the other two? I'll give you the answer to that very shortly. But I think what I'll do now is give you the answer to the Twitter Responde Live Listening Challenge. It was, if you remember, we've run out of toner. 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 Now, what am I saying? We frun out to toner. Well, in fact, I'm saying we have contracted weave. And then we have the expression. But first of all, I want to just have a look to see who else has had a go. Javi Lopez has had another go. And basically quite a good list. Peter, as I said before, Juan Ramon, Mercedes, Belén. So the most important part, run outer. We've run outer. What does that mean? Run outer. Well, quedar sin, I think, is a good translation, or agotarse de algo as well. Quedarse sin algo, agotarse, acabarse. Basically, to run out of. But what have we run out of? We've run out of toner. We've run out of toner. Toner. Now, what is toner? Now, quite a few people guessed that I was saying the word atún in English. However, listen to that, because atún in English is normally pronounced tuna or tuna, even like a CH sound, tuna or tuna. But no, I said toner. So toner is, in fact, the same in Spanish, I would say, toner. If you're talking about printers, then you need toner. So we've run out of toner would be, excuse me, hemos quedado sin toner. In nuestra impresora, do you say? Yeah, printer. So we've run out of toner. So well done to the people who got it right. I can tell you that the first person to write in, as I told you before, was Express, I think, wasn't it? I'm just going to go up the list, just scroll up, so I can tell you who got it right. Okay, the first person was, as I said before, yeah, that's right, it was Express. And Express put, we've run out of toner. Perfect. Melena also wrote, we've run out of toner, but she spelt tone with two N's, which I've never seen before, but I think you got it right anyway. Then Javi thought I said tuna. Then Smarta, we've run out of toner. Then Maria Angeles Vidal said that went over my head. Can you repeat it, please? Very good. Yolanda got it right as well. We've run out of toner. Paola Nimulescu also spelt toner with two N's, but she got the rest right. We've run out of toner. Then who else? Mr. Houses, we've run out of toner. Nos hemos quedado sin toner. That's better. Nos hemos quedado sin toner. That's much, much better. Nos hemos quedado, not hemos quedado. Nos hemos quedado sin toner. Or se nos ha acabado el toner. There we go. Well done, Mr. Houses. Thank you for the translations. And Maggie also spelt toner with double N. Okay. We're out of turn, aren't we? That was Manuel Cano. Virginia Palacín said, we've run out of toner. Very well done. And what else do we have? We have Belén González. We've run out of toner. Again, with two N's. Now, I've never seen it spelled like that. I'm going to check. Maybe somewhere it is sometimes spelled with two N's, but I've never seen it. It's nearly always spelled T-O-N-E-R, like the Spanish, but without the little line above the O. We've run out of tuna, said Mercedes Jimenez. And Juan Ramon Galvez said, we've run out of toner. Very good. And so did Peter. He said, don't you have a toner? So he was close. The most important word he got right, toner. And then if I go up a little bit further, I think that's all we have. Javi also said, we've run out of toner again. And I think that's about it. So well done to everyone who had a go. If I didn't read your name out, I do apologize. I try to read people's name out, but occasionally I miss names off the list. But we've run out of toner. We've run out of toner. We've run out of toner. We have contracted. We've run out of toner. Nos hemos quedado sin toner. Muy bien. So now let's give you the podcast edition. This is one I'll give you just once, and you will have to download the podcast if you want to hear it again. Okay? And I'll give you the answer to it, of course, at the beginning of tomorrow's show. So are you ready for today's Twitter Responde podcast listening challenge? Good. Okay, let's count down from five, shall we? Five, four, three, two, one. If you brought a towel with you.
¿Vas a dejar pasar el verano otra vez sin hacer nada con tu inglés? Vente a Vaughan. Con nuestros Summer Impacts refrescarás tu inglés con los mejores profesores. Este verano, hazte un Summer Impacts, un curso intensivo con clases concentradísimas y muy, muy refrescantes. Summer Impacts. Más información en grupovaughan.com.
Hola, guapa. ¿Puedo invitarte a algo?
Sí, claro. Un margarita y otro para Julia.
¿Julia?
Sí, Julia, mi profesora Vaughan, le gusta con mucha hierbabuena.
Este año, llévate de vacaciones a tus profesores Vaughan preferidos. Aprovecha el verano para mejorar tu nivel de inglés con el método online Vaughan. Flexible, adaptado a tus horarios, con los contenidos que nos han hecho famosos y, por supuesto, con nuestros profesores únicos. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en aprendeinglestv.com. Do you Vaughan?
Lecciones, noticias, entrevistas, curiosidades, promociones y todas las novedades de Grupo Vaughan. Síguenos en Twitter, @Vaughan-radio o @Grupo Vaughan y en facebook.com/Grupo Vaughan. Conéctate, síguenos.
Con el curso online de Vaughan sacarás el inglés que llevas dentro. Adaptado a tus horarios, flexible y con todos los contenidos del método Vaughan. Y con nuestros profesores siempre disponibles. Contrátalo ahora con toda comodidad. Entra en aprendeinglestv.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Welcome back to The Sound of English. I need to give you the answer to the third and final app question. It seems to be working okay today, fingers crossed. Which of the following three words is pronounced differently from the other two? The first word was pera in English, which is P-E-A-R, and of course pronounced pear. Now, the second word was a translation of embarcadero or muelle, which is spelt P-I-E-R and pronounced peer. So the first two are definitely different. So it depends on the third one, which is correct. So it's pareja or par. And of course it is spelt P-A-I-R and pronounced pear, of course. So pear, pareja, par, and pera, pear as well, sound exactly the same. So the odd one out, the one which is pronounced differently to the other two, is pier, or embarcadero, or muelle in Spanish. So well done to everyone who got that right. Quite a few of you got it right. And I'll give you some more app questions on tomorrow's show. And it looks like everything's working smoothly at the moment. So let's see how that goes. Right. I'm going to start this week with a composer we've looked at before in the past, a friend of Mozart's, a classical composer. He was quite old when he died, and he composed many, many pieces. It is, of course, Joseph Haydn. Now, Joseph Haydn was born in the 1730s, and he died in the beginning, really, of the 1800s. Now, his life was really marked by a 30-year period in which he was working for a family in the middle of nowhere. This family was called the Esterházy family, a Hungarian family, a noble family, and they had their residence in the middle of nowhere. So he was very, very isolated for many years. When he got the position, this was in about 1760, first of all, he was just a normal musician. And then in 1766, he was promoted to Kapellmeister, which in Spanish, I think, would be Maestro de Capilla. Yeah, so a general music boss, really. So Kapellmeister. So that was in 1766. And then just after that, he wrote the piece we're going to be looking at today. It is a piece for keyboard, of course, because that's the only thing I know how to play. It's called a sonata, but really, it's more of a divertimento. It's a sonata stroke divertimento. It's an interesting piece. It's fairly early. It's not one of his late sonatas, but it's very, very influenced by one of J.S. Bach's sons, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. And it's very influenced by the idea of, if I can read this word in German, Empfindsamkeit. Empfindsamkeit means something like heightened sensibility. And it was like an artistic movement at the time in the sort of mid 17th century to do with heightened sensibility. What does that mean? Well, before this idea, if we're talking about Baroque music, really there was like an idea of the doctrine of the affections. So the Baroque Affektenlehre, in which a piece of music or a poem would just have one type of emotion. So, for example, if you go back to the famous French philosopher Descartes, he believed there were six main affects. So one was love, hatred, desire, joy, sorrow, and admiration. So if you listen to a lot of Baroque music, it starts in a certain style with a certain mood, and that mood continues throughout the piece. Much the same as a lot of pop music nowadays. You have a song and it expresses an emotion. However, with this new, at the time, Empfindsamkeit, what composers and poets wanted to demonstrate was that emotions can change during the piece. So this particular sonata by Haydn starts out with a very simple melody. So that's the opening of this sonata. It's now in the catalogue. There is there was a guy who catalogued all of Haydn's music about 100 years ago now. He was called Anthony van Hoboken. Hoboken was a Dutch guy, a Dutch musical collector, musicologist, bibliographer as well. And he studied the works of Haydn and he made a definitive catalogue of all of his music. Because if not, there is so much of Haydn's work that it's very difficult to find stuff. So, for example, there are 104 symphonies. There are over 50 of these piano sonatas. So you need a good, well-ordered catalogue to be able to identify which piece you mean. So, yeah, Hoboken was the guy who catalogued Haydn's work. So now his music is often called, for example, Sonata Hoboken number 1646. That's what this piece is called. Wow, what a beautiful title. Sonata Hoboken 1646. So this is what this sonata is called. It starts off, as I said, with this. So this emotion that's being expressed now is, I would say, contentment. It's not really very sad or joyful or admiration, love, hatred, desire. Which one would you say? But the important thing is that the mood changes throughout the piece. So it starts off with this fairly, tranquil-like melody. Notice the ornaments as well. So it has this like a sighing sort of feel to it, this dropping. And then this very fast, which is unexpected. Basically, we've run out of time, I'm afraid. So what I'll do is I'll play the first bit of this sonata and we'll carry on listening to it. It's an amazing piece, I promise. Maybe the first time you hear it, it's not, you know, it doesn't grab you by the throat. But it is an amazing piece. So here is the first part of Haydn's Sonata Hoboken 1646.